Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. In 1985, Salt Lake City was shattered when three bombs went off in 2 days. It was the work of Mark Hoffman, a master forger and now a bomber. He killed two people and injured himself in these bomb blasts. Kurt Bench was actually a good friend of Mark Hoffman at the time, as well as one of the victims killed, Steve Christensen. Kurt gives us his first-hand account of how he learned about this, and especially how he was first introduced to Mark Hoffman. Let's listen in on our conversation. Well, I'd like to welcome everybody out to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm here with Kurt Bench. He's the owner of Benchmark Books here in Salt Lake City. Kurt, first of all, I'd just like to thank you for taking some time to talk with me today.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.
All right. So, Kurt has a wonderful bookstore. I've bought way too many books. I've paid Kurt a lot of money already, so.
Well, we'll decide whether you've bought too many or not.
So, anyway, I know Kurt was involved, was actually good friends, as I understand it, with Mark Hoffman, and kind of has a real first-hand view of things. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about, you know, your experiences, what you remember, and that sort of thing about the whole Mark Hoffman saga. So, but before I do that, do you want to give a little short commercial for your bookstore here and how you got started?
Well, of course, you don't have to twist my arm to do that. Well, this is our 30th year as Benchmark Books, and before that I was with Deseret Book Company, and that's where I got to know Mark Hoffman. I headed up the fine and rare books department, but another part of my life. But we've been at this location, which is, I don't know how specific you want me to be, 3269 South Main Street in Salt Lake. We've been here since 1994. Prior to that, we had a little store down on Rio Grande Street, down by the Utah Historical Society. And we moved here in 1994 and have been going, you know, strong ever since. I mean, there's always ups and downs in the business, but we specialize in LDS books, in print, out of print, used, rare, the whole gamut. We find out of print books for people. We have lots of new books, lots of in print books. We specialize in Mormon studies, so you're likely to find some of the more serious history and biography and theology. We don't stock every LDS book that comes out. That's not our mission. But we've been doing this a long time, and we've had some wonderful things come through our hands, some really rare things in addition to the, you know, the whatever books that you and others like to buy that aren't necessarily collectible, but, you know, just for good reading and for research. Have a small staff of, there's four of us all together, but everybody knows their stuff and they like doing what they do, and we love our job here and helping people find books that they're looking for that will give them some kind of fulfillment, whether it's for research or for pleasure.
Well, I know, I think it was the last Mormon History Association meetings, I promised myself I wasn't going to buy any books, and then I walked by your table and I bought like three books. So.
Well, so you shouldn't have that attitude to begin with about not
spending
wanting
too much
to buy
money.
Books.
I don't even read all the books that I have, but it is nice to have them. So one of the books that I did buy was the Turley book and I've just actually been reading through that. To kind of brush up for this as well. So
it's an important book on the subject.
Yeah. So what are some of the best books on the Hoffman case?
The first one that most people turn to is Salamander, the story of the Mormon forgery murders by Linda Sillitoe and Alan Roberts. And then Rick Turley's Victims offers some insights, kind of an insider's view that they weren't able to because Rick was employed by the church and had full access to general authorities and others who were involved and was able to get a lot of important material. And he interviewed lots of people. And so as we talked about earlier, I think if you read those two books, you'll get a really good overview of what happened. In fact, more detail than you'd probably remember. But they're both balanced and filled with important information, relevant information. Another good one is Gathering of Saints, sorry about that, by Robert Lindsay. As an outsider, I think he did a very respectable job. He was kind of on the scene fairly early when it came to books, and he's the one that did The Falcon and the Snowman, which was a national bestseller and made into a movie. I think he did a decent job, and there were some lots of other books that mention Hoffman, and there's some that weren't very good. There have been lots of documentaries and lots of articles and other things that have been done on the subject. You know, this year will be 32 years since the bombings, and so, but the interest is still quite high, I think, for something that happened that long ago.
Well, you know, murder is a kind of an interesting subject, especially when it comes to religion, I think.
Well, that's true. We've never had anything like that happen in Utah or in, you know, Mormon history per se. Certainly there's been violence from time to time, but that was such an unusual, horrendous, dramatic kind of story. It is intriguing, but very sad and tragic.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, you know, kind of the beginnings. I mean, you actually knew Mark Hoffman. How did you get introduced to him?
Well, I tell people I didn't know him as well as I wish I had, you know, as I should have. And when you said we were good friends, we were friends, but we did a lot of business together. He had kind of established himself as a, I guess what today what would we say, kind of a rock star. I mean, he had made some amazing discoveries of Mormon documents, the Anton transcript and, you know, things like that that got him a lot of attention. And I met him, and I was in the same business, although we hadn't really done documents very much, maybe once in a while, but we did a lot of rare books and other collectibles. And so I was kind of excited to meet Mark Hoffman, who had gotten all this attention and had established himself as an expert in documents, and as well as other things, rare books and things. It made sense for me to get to know him and to do business with him, and we did a lot of business over the next few years.
What, approximately, do you remember what year it was?
About 1980 or 81, somewhere in there. And then,
so by that time he had already established a name for himself.
Yes.
As finding a lot of rare books and coins and things.
Yeah, by the time that I met him, he had already made some discoveries that got him a lot of media attention, and so he came into my store. I was managing one of the Deseret bookstores, and he came in and introduced himself, and I hate to say it, but the rest is history.
Well, great. What were some of the things that, did you purchase things from him?
Oh, we purchased lots of things from him. And not all Mormon stuff, too. I mean, he presented us with things that were fascinating, but most of it was Utah or Mormon related. But I mean, sometimes we would take things on consignment. I remember we had a Martha Washington document. Some of the things, I mean, I could recall some of the things that came through our hands. There was a promissory note that was signed by Orrin Porter Rockwell, with his ex. Elijah Abel, the black who held the priesthood, a document that had his ex. Mark was good at doing exes, apparently. And we had a Daniel Boone document. I'm just trying to think of some things that weren't just in the Mormon field. And some things were books, but quite often they were documents. And so this was my big foray into that field. I was a relative novice when it came to Mormon manuscripts and documents. And so I kind of let him guide me in a lot of cases. And when he would, he wasn't dramatic at all and didn't really seem like he was trying to sell you. You know, he wasn't a used car salesman type at all. He was quiet and introspective, but he never made a big deal about things. But often he would say, "It's a nice item," you know. But he'd tell you the background and why he thought it was saleable, and it would always give you a good enough deal that you didn't feel you could pass it up. And if anything ever went wrong, he would take it back. I mean, one time, I don't remember when it was, but we had a signed Brigham Young photograph, and I sold it to a man who was very knowledgeable about such things, and he took a look at it and examined it closely and returned it because he said it's a forgery. You know, that's not Brigham Young's signature. I can't remember all the details now, but he determined that it couldn't be good because of the paper and so on. And so I told Mark, and he said, "Oh, no problem. I'll talk to the guy I got it from, you know, and I'll try to get my money back."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he did that a lot. So if there was ever a question about something, he would take it back, and then he would always, you know, "Well, I'll talk to, you know, my source about that." And
okay, so there were cases where, I mean, because it sounds like he wasn't really unmasked until the bombing, but there were cases
before that.
It
wasn't at the bombing. It was considerably after that he was really unmasked.
Oh, okay.
It took a while.
But even before, there were cases where people would say, "This looks like a forgery, I don't believe this," and so they'd get their money back or whatever.
Occasionally.
Okay, so it wasn't a frequent thing, but there were...
It happened. Another example that I can think of is William Clayton's Latter-day Saints Emigrant's Guide, which is a printed item. And we got one from him and showed it to, or either showed it to or described it to an expert who'd been doing this kind of thing for a long time. And he determined by the way it was laid out and it was gathered, you know, printed things are done in signatures, groupings of pages, and it had the wrong grouping. And anyway, he determined that was probably a later, might not have been a deliberate forgery, but it was somebody had done it later and hadn't done it according to the way the original was done. And so I told Mark that, and it was the same kind of thing. "Well, okay, I'll take it back and give you your money back," or I can't remember if he traded us something else, but he made good on it and said that, you know, he was upset to find out that it wasn't real. And of course, later we found out that he had done more than one. He actually printed those himself.
Oh, wow.
We found out much later. And a friend of mine who was a collector had also gotten one. And so one thing that maybe we might be leading to this at some point, but Mark was really good at compartmentalizing, I think himself, but also people. And to one group, he would appear sympathetic, whether, you know, like, and we didn't know any of this, but when he was with, you know, anti-Mormons, they probably thought he was one of them, liberal Mormons, historians, you know, different groups, and those who were also doing business with him, but he was able to, there was never an occasion where all those people could get together and compare notes. And so, you know, we were kind of in our own isolated groups, and so we didn't know what he was up to for a long time because he was so good at masking that and hiding things from people and kind of blending in and making you feel like he was one of you, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, so he basically told people what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, he did a lot of that. And in fact, you know, a lot of things in retrospect seem clear. You know, as they say, hindsight is always 20/20, but we didn't have that benefit of hindsight then. But he would almost do a special order for you. I mean, you could talk to Brent Ashworth and find out that, you know, one very dramatic example was that Brent said, wouldn't it be great to have something written by Joseph Smith from the Carthage jail? Well, Mark came up with something. Such a thing, and I was involved with that at one point too, but you know, sometimes you would let him know what you really wanted, and eventually something like that might come about.
Hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
special orders.
That's funny.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Kurt Bench. In our next discussion, we'll talk about the White Salamander letter. It's one of the most important forgeries of Mark Hoffman and plays an important role in the bombings.
It was just it was as different a story or a different take on the traditional story as one could imagine. And so he had claimed to have gotten it back east as a letter that came into his hands through a compatriot of his, when actually later we find out that Mark created the document. But it kind of turned Mormon history on its head. And then you have people squaring up on each side, scholars that are trying to make sense of it, and others just saying that there's no way that that could be true.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.